Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday night open call. It is September 2nd, 2014. It's hard to believe that the 3 months of summer, June, July, and August, are gone, but here we are heading into the fall. I'd like to welcome everybody tonight. I got a call from Jesse early this morning, and he informed me that more than likely he is not going to be able to make the call tonight. He is tied up with some stuff. I'd say there might be a chance he might show up late, but I would not count on it. We will just find out whether he seems to pop up and chime in. But I wanted to let everybody know that in the beginning. And I'd like to welcome everybody again. I'm going to do a very quick disclaimer, like Jesse always does, and tell everybody that what you hear on this call is not legal advice. We have discussion about legal issues. We talk about various laws, different scenarios, and we have discussions. We have a lot of fun. We don't give any legal advice because we are not attorneys. If you want legal advice, go find yourself a bar-licensed attorney and pay the money, and more than likely you'll get some semblance of some type of legal advice, at least hope so. So with that said, we're getting everybody rounded up here. We've got, I'm trying to get Terry on here, get her unmuted. Terry, are you there now?
I am.
Good evening.
Good evening.
We've got John. Well, I want to get him marked because I had him marked once. And I know you are. Had you marked once. I got to mark everybody on the board so that I know who's here. I'm just the only one I'm not seeing yet is Jeff, and I got to go search him out. He's probably down here at the bottom of the list somewhere. Who knows? But we'll find him. And once we get Jeff going with us, then we will get things done. For everybody that's on the call with us, if you have good news and good news only, hit the one key on your phone at this time. That is for good news only. Wait until I bring up the Q&A time. I will announce that, and then everybody can jump in. But right now, the only people that should be hitting the one key on your phone pad are those people that have good news. How about our moderators? Any of our moderators got any good news? I think John's got some.
had a lawyer put in an attempt to get sanctions and successfully defeated that. They had no basis, and in fact the court in their order pointed out to the other side that in one of the court's rulings there was no basis for them to put in for sanctions. So I think that was a waste of time of the court that the other side did that, but anyways, it's good news.
That's very good news. Absolutely. Yep. Congratulations on that. Larry, you got any good news for us? You got a check yet? Larry must have gone to the kitchen. All right. I'm still looking for Jeff. Jeff.
Tell you when I get one.
You'll tell us when you get one. Okay, well, I was just inquiring. I knew you were working on some stuff. You had some things on the stove. I didn't know if anything was done and prepared. But that'll be a very good thing when you do. I think poor Jeff may have gotten stifled by the storms. They had some pretty severe storms around where he was this afternoon. I talked to him earlier, and it was raining so hard he could not see the house across the street. And that's pretty hard. And Terry had a real good deal this afternoon as well. Terry, did you have any good news you wanted to pass on to anybody? I think you did.
Oh, well, are you talking about this motion I'm working on?
I'm talking about any good news that you might have.
Okay.
You know what we do with good news? Good news can be any number of different things.
As everybody probably knows by this time, excuse me, the other side filed a motion for summary judgment, and I had filed for an extension of time to file my opposition because this case is so incredibly complicated and convoluted, and I don't have a staff. Well, the judge granted it and gave me until September 9th to file it. It is completed. It is done. It was a hellacious amount of work, but it's all finished and ready to go, and I had intended to send it to the court tomorrow because, as a pro se here in Georgia, I have to use the mail. I can't use ECF. And it has taken 6 to 8 days many times for mail to get from where I am in Eastman to Augusta, which is 300 miles, you know. So in order to make it by the 9th, I would have to mail it out tomorrow. Well, there is a protective order, and the contracts, which I successfully got them by court order to have to turn over to me, I referred to majorly in my opposition and am attaching them as exhibits. And according to the protective order, if I do that, I have to notice them at least 7 days in advance so that they can file a motion to file under seal before I actually do it. So on the 25th of August, I filed a notice with the court that I was indeed going to refer to those contracts and attach them as exhibits. And the other side waited until the 59th minute of the 11th hour, as they always do throughout this case, to file their motion for to file under seal. Well, they are very well aware of my problem with the mail. They are taking advantage of my disadvantage. They know that in order for me to meet the deadline that the judge gave me of September 9th, I would have to file my motion tomorrow. But if I do, that will put me in violation of the protective order. So not being able to find anything in the rules anywhere that deals with a quandary such as this, where I'm literally damned if I do and damned if I don't, you know, plus the protective order does have a provision in it where I have the right to object to their motion to file under seal. So I called my clerk, and unfortunately my personal clerk that I always have is out on vacation. The judge's clerk is out on vacation. So I talked to a clerk I'd never talked to before who just doesn't know anything, and she couldn't come up with anything. She couldn't answer my procedural questions on the proper step to take at this point, since it isn't outlined in the rules. Dave and I had talked a couple of hours before that, and I had come to the decision that the best thing for me to do is file a motion to stay pending a ruling on their motion to file under seal. And in that motion to stay, notice the court of my intention to file an opposition to their motion to file under seal and overnight that to the court tomorrow so that I can ask the court to stay that deadline of September 9th until I have a chance, I get the opportunity to oppose their motion, and the court gets the opportunity to rule on it. So I'm staying ahead of their antics.
Well, and that's what you got to do, and that's why we always tell people that this is more than, oh, well, you just get a template of a complaint and you put some stuff on it and you file it and somebody sends you a check. It doesn't work that way. You do have to learn. You do have to study. And sometimes you can get into a substantial battle with things. I've had that. Terry has had that. Larry has had it. Jesse has had it. You know,
and
we've all been through this. John's had it.
In this situation, it's so unusual. You know, I even asked Craig about it, the attorney. He didn't know either, because it's a very unusual situation. They have managed, by their shenanigans, to try to put me in a corner where if I comply with the judge's deadline and rule, his ruling, I'll be in violation of a protective order. And if I don't, then they'll get their protective order without my objection. And my entire argument against summary judgment would have to be under seal. And, you know, they think they've successfully got me in a low corner. Well, sometimes these things, and you better be prepared for it, because this is so completely out of the norm and it's not covered in the rules, that you got to be creative. You got to come up with some way to counter it. And, you know, Dave and Craig and I, and we all agreed, this is the best way to go about it. Notice the court. It's actually the court and their rulings that have enabled them to put me in this little box here. And so by doing what I'm going to do, this motion to stay and notice of intent, is letting the court know I am aware of the court's deadlines, the reason for it. I have my motion all written. Everything is ready to go. But I'm also aware of my obligation under a protective order, and I just need to let the court know what I am doing and why I am doing it, and ask them to stay that date until the court rules one way or the other on this. So
right.
Sometimes you just have to be creative.
You got to be creative, but you got to stay with the game, and you have to understand it is more than just, you know, filing a complaint with the court, and they send you a check. Sometimes that does happen. Make no mistake about it. But
they absolutely should have, Dave.
they're going to wish they had done that in the long run on yours. But you're having to put an immense amount of work into it. But you're going to be rewarded to it anyway. But anyway, that's
you also need to challenge those documents, Terry. You know, they have designated them something, but you haven't challenged them if they're private proprietary
John,
or trade secret.
I forgot about that. In their motion, this particular set of defendants, they have been caught blatantly, flat out lying to the court on multiple occasions. And they did it once again in their motion and stated that I had no objection. I did not object to the designation and so forth. When the fact is, I most certainly did, and vehemently, in over almost 2-week period of time, in back and forth emails before I would protective order. And so the provision in the protective order that gives me the right to object, that's where I have to spell it out to the court. I did object, I do object, and here why. And you're right, John. You know, if I don't overnight this to the court tomorrow and let the court know I fully intend to file that objection, then they could easily get their motion granted before my paperwork even gets to Augusta.
And you need to get that in right away and challenge it, because this is an ex parte thing. The discovery is ex parte, and you have to have an evidentiary hearing to designate it as being such and such.
Yeah, hold on just a second.
And everybody, I may have somebody very unexpectedly knocking on my door. I have somebody repairing my car. The starter went out on my car Saturday, and I had to walk 2.5 miles home in the heat. And then I had a rather unfortunate incident where I fell here at home. I got caught my foot in a wire when I was moving a computer case and did some damage to my knee, to my face, and to my finger. So I may have to go and answer a door here. But anyway,
yeah,
do you have anything else
daughter.
You wanted to say there? Otherwise, we need to keep the ball rolling here.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know how many years have to go by before my family understands. Don't call me after 8 o'clock on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
Really?
Okay, no. Other than that, I did get a cell phone, and within one, it wasn't even an hour after activating it, that FIA Card Services started calling. And I was gone over the weekend. I never did get an opportunity to answer it because I was gone. And I came back, and there were 5 calls. And then while I was talking to Dave a little while ago, another one. So there's 6 calls. I don't know who they're calling for, but it sure can't be me. That's what's going on with that.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. That's cool. I haven't gotten too many calls lately. I got one call today, but I've been so busy I haven't even had a chance to go and look and see who it was. But anyway, because I use my other cell phone most of the time for things. But anyway, thank you, Terry. I still haven't found Jeff on the board here. I don't know. I think he must either have some problems with storms or something. We'll just keep an eye out and bring him on when he gets ready to go with us. Okay. I'm going to go to those people that have good news, and the only people that should have hit the one key up to now are going to be those people that have good news. And I think there's Jeff that finally popped up. Jeff, you with us now?
Yeah, and I got good news, but it'll wait till everybody else has had their turn.
Well, we already did good news. We've been doing our moderator, so go ahead and do yours real quick, and then we're going to go to the callers.
You know, I sent that letter, notice of intent to litigate, and they got it on the 20th of August, and I got a couple of calls up until the 21st, and then the lines went quiet until 7:30 this evening.
Oh, no, you're kidding me.
No, I'm not.
Brain dead.
Yeah, so now the call counts up to 17. So,
well, that.
I mean, even when you tell them you're going to sue them if they don't quit, you know.
Yeah, well, that you're going to have to alter that complaint.
Yes, I already have, and I got busy doing it and lost track of the time.
Oh, okay, that's why you're a little late here. Okay.
Yes,
all right.
I do beg your pardon, and the audience's pardon as well.
Well, but that is good news. That's wonderful. All right. Okay, let's go to 407 for good news. 407,
hey,
you've
guys.
Been unmuted. Hello.
This is Belva in Central Florida.
Hi, Belva.
I shared my good news last night on Dave's call. Am I understanding that Jesse is not on the call tonight?
Jesse called me early, and he said that he was pretty sure that he would not be able to make the call tonight. I think there's a chance he may pop in late, but I don't know. He forewarned me, so I'm telling everybody to think in terms of he's not here unless he happens
okay.
to pop up late.
Well, he'll just have to miss out on my good news for now.
he'll hear about it, believe me. He'll hear about
it'll
it.
It'll be on the forum. This is my I have 2 houses in foreclosure. I shared my good information, my good news with my rental property recently. That case was dismissed. And in Florida, those things are rare. What happened this past week was on my homestead. Back in March, we had a trial. The judge was prepared to go ahead and grant the foreclosure and set a sale date. My attorney, basically, he fought like hell. And then he tried one more strategy that he's used in a different lawsuit that he had success with, and that is he pointed out that the new plaintiff had not paid doc stamps on the note, and that was a law. That was required by law. The the judge and the plaintiff kind of shook their head because they had not heard that or considered that. The judge told the plaintiff if they would go down, right downtown Orlando, a few blocks away, pay the dock stamps and come back, he'd grant the foreclosure and set the sale date. That was in March. We haven't heard from them, and now it's August. As of last week, my attorney calls me Friday morning and tells me that the judge ordered a dismissal and reversed in our favor because they never did go pay the dock stamps. So he ordered a dismissal without prejudice for failure to pay the dock stamps. So at this moment, it's 2-for-2. And
hot damn.
Dismissed, and we imagine they'll come back, but for now it's a win. And the statute of limitations is creeping up pretty quick. So thank you everyone for all your support.
You are
That's
very
wonderful.
Welcome. Great job. And it's really interesting, you know, the thought that I come away from, they wouldn't go and spend a few dollars on dock stamps to steal your house. Maybe because they don't have the proper paperwork to do it?
I would say that's probably part of it. And I would also say because it's securitized, they probably bought a bundle of properties. And they have no clue what they paid or what's what. And they sold it to a whole bunch of investors all over the world. And they
right.
got to have a figure to figure out how much the dock stamps are.
Right, and they're going to have to produce paperwork to substantiate that. They're not.
True.
You can't just go down there and say, "Oh, we paid $41,000 for this $300,000
right.
home." You know, no.
Exactly.
You need to show us bona fide paperwork. So that's an indication right there that they can't.
It seems so simple, but it's really not, is it? So it's very clever. It's a very clever strategy.
It is. It's very good.
I posted it on the forum, and there's a case law that my attorney had used as his strategy, and I posted that on the forum. It's Selma versus Metro Electronics Corporation. I don't know what that means, but it worked.
That's fantastic.
So,
I love
awesome.
It. Congratulations.
Thank you so
That's
much.
That's not good news. That's great news. 2-for-2 on yours.
That's wonderful.
Thank you.
All righty. Thank you very much. Are you going to have a question for us later? Or
No. I'm going to no.
Okay.
I'm going to mute out. Thank you.
Okay. If you would hit the one key on your phone, and that will take you out of the queue then. And
okay. Very good.
That'll help me out too. Thank you so much.
Very good.
Congratulations again. Great job. All right.
And while we have a moment of silence, Dave, do you need for me to put my hand down?
No.
Okay.
I want your hand up. Hey, Dave, hey, here I am. Okay, we're going to go to 601. You've been unmuted. Go ahead. 601 for good news. 601 going once, twice. We're going to move on. We're going to go to 813. 813, you've been unmuted for good news. Hello.
I have good news.
I love it.
Just a little bit, but it's huge.
Hey,
I talked with my phone company today to get my phone records, and they said, well, we can only go back 3 months. So I said, okay, tell me how to go about providing you with a subpoena so that I can go back to February. And they said, oh, well, since you need it for a court case, we'll get it for you within 6 to 7 business days.
Whoa!
I said, wow, that's really great. And that was Friday, and I just got an email from them with an Excel spreadsheet with all my calls on it.
Wow, very good.
One business day over a holiday weekend.
That's amazing.
It is.
It really is.
Yeah. It's not often you see that anymore, but usually they want to fight you for all that kind of stuff. But evidently, you know, their customer service people are really trying to make a good impression on their customer base, which, you know, if they want to maintain business, they have to.
What incredible service provider is that?
Actually, it's a multi-level marketing company called Solovay, and I think they use the Sprint network.
Okay.
Wow.
But they were really on it. I couldn't believe it. One business day after a holiday weekend.
My goodness.
I guess they didn't want to hear anything about a subpoena.
I guess not.
Hey, you guys, I gotta grab something here on my call. Continue your conversation. I'll be right back.
I was just telling Terry that. Go ahead,
Jeff. They probably didn't want to get anything on them from that subpoena.
It might leak.
No, I was just telling Terry, it was 270 pages of calls, so I said, I talk too much, so let me turn it over to somebody else.
Now you've got absolute proof that you talk too much, right?
That's right. Right there in black and white. Oh, my goodness. So that's my good news.
That's wonderful.
That's very, very good news. A lot of these service providers, such as phone services, yeah, you have to fight them tooth and nail to get anything out of them.
Yes.
Especially
in a timely
manner.
Well, my previous provider, I did have to serve with a subpoena, so we'll see how long that takes. But
all right.
I was just so excited to have that kind of customer support. I don't care if it's a phone company or the grocery store. That's just outstanding service.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're right. It's so unusual.
Very. Terry, in Dave's absence, can you switch over to someone else, take good news from someone else? Because that's all I have for tonight.
No,
I don't have the board.
We can't see the board.
Oh.
If it was my call, I could, but I don't have the board, so I can't.
So, go ahead. I have reworked my complaint. As I mentioned earlier on, it was the reason why I was tardy in getting to the call, because I lost track of time. But I got it prepared. It's ready to go out tomorrow with a notice of a pending lawsuit.
Well, I'm back, guys.
Okay.
All right. And things went from bad to worse.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
It wasn't the starter.
No. The engine's locked up.
Oh, you're
the
kidding.
The engine of my car is locked up. No, I'm not kidding. I was driving down the street, and it quit and went over to the, pulled it off, and the guy put the starter on it, and it wouldn't work, and he tried turning the engine, and it's locked up tighter than a drum. So evidently the engine just failed, just bang, just like that. I have no idea.
My goodness.
Either way. So I'm going to have to go car shopping. So anyway.
And
so
Dave likes
about my
his
stuff.
Car. Dave likes
it's been a good car.
Car
for him.
Yeah,
well, yeah,
I didn't like my car. Yeah, I didn't like it that much. I can handle another car. I just didn't want to spend the money right now. So, anyway, I'll end up getting another one. So, okay, all right. I don't have anybody else that has their hand up here for good news. So we are going to go ahead and anybody that's got questions, hit the one key on your phone, and we will jump in, and we'll get going with Q&A and see how many people we can help tonight. Again, for everybody, for the new callers that have come on, Jesse is not with us tonight. He called me early this morning and said he thought he was going to be tied up, and it appears he is because he's not here yet. So I'd say there's a small chance he may pop in a little bit later, but we don't want to count on it, so we'll focus on that. We got plenty of knowledge on the phone here, and hopefully we can get people taken care of. So let's go to 724. 724, you've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dave.
How you doing?
Yes. Sorry about your car, man.
Yeah. Well,
I had a beautiful Jag that I had bought on, XJR, 370 horsepower. Absolutely beautiful car. Same thing happened to me, man.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is no special car. I've driven it for 6 years. I've gotten my money's worth out of it. I can.
Yeah. You need some good news. We'll get you a ride, man.
Yeah. Well, I've got friends in the business. The guy that got this for me is a good friend of mine. The one I talk about up in Kansas. He can go to the auction and pick up cars. But
that's fun.
I just
go with him.
I was. No, he bought it, and I went up and picked it up. Yeah. Oh, I used
okay.
to be a dealer,
well,
so I know what the options are.
Folks out
yep.
there.
Yeah, let's go ahead.
My rubber is finally hitting the road as
okay.
far as filing a lawsuit. I'm 2 years into this. Talked to you guys 100 times. I'm sure you're probably getting to know me by now, but it is a TCPA and an FDCPA.
Okay.
And it was an alleged debt for $160, and they did 25 phone calls automated to my cell phone. So for a $165 debt, I got a $39,000 lawsuit.
Okay.
And so my question is simple. I wanted to know, I documented every single call, the day, the time, the phone number, and I have that all on an Exhibit A. And my question is, from that, could I do a verified complaint or not?
Well, sure.
I didn't do pictures, but that, you know, when I did this, I hadn't heard
about
it.
No, you can do a verified complaint because that's firsthand fact knowledge that you have. You were there. You had those calls come in on your cell phone. It's not like
right.
somebody else told you that they called
okay.
the phone. You
that's,
took
and
them.
That's what I'm alleging.
Right. That's firsthand fact knowledge. So
and it will
you
check
can
out
do a verified
discovery
complaint.
Because I did, you know, I checked out every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's
yep.
pretty much it. I mean, I think I've got I got it all right. I'm just going to go with it, man. You know?
Yeah.
I guess the rubber's got to hit the road at some point.
There you go. Got
to
have
the judge
some fun.
If I have to amend something, the judge, but it looks pretty clean. It's concise. Oh. It's not a book. It's, I think I got
it. You don't want
in.
A book.
Right.
Yeah, you don't want a book.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, I'll let you know what
okay.
happens.
All right, yeah. Keep some
I'm
to
out.
Date on it. Thanks very much. Appreciate
it. Thank you,
guys. Bye-bye. All right. Let's go to 208.
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Hello. Yes, we can hear you fine.
What's the proper wording to revoke permission to call a phone number with a company? I mean, what's the
upon your receipt of this letter, I hereby revoke my consent for you to call telephone number 1234567 effective immediately.
Okay.
It's as simple as that. You don't need any, you know, $2,500 lawyer language for that. You just put it in plain English and tell them that the revocation is effective upon their receipt of that. And, of course, you send it certified mail. So you're going to have evidence of what time they got it because the Postal Service even nails it down to its date and time. You know, they got it on the 14th at 11:03 a.m. That's it.
Right. Okay.
The principle works real good.
Yeah, just a word to the wise. Don't embellish it. Don't take two paragraphs to say what you can say in one sentence because if you do, you create confusion. And you get ignored, and you have no basis.
Well,
and I had it
somebody
at one
can
sentence.
Possibly twist it.
Right.
Yeah, and I had it at one sentence, but I just wanted to just ask before I sent it off.
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
Yep, that's all you need. That KISS principle works real good. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Okay. Thank you, and I'll let you move on to the next person.
All righty. Thank you very much. Okay, we're going to go down to Florida, 305. You have been unmuted. 305-766. Yep, how you doing?
Good. I'm working on this case here. We had spoken last week. I was going to file the amended complaint to add some defendants on my case here. I went down there, and the clerk said I had to file a motion first to do this amended complaint. Now, this little bit of background should jog your memory. I had filed
You're breaking up real bad. We're not hearing everything you're saying. Yeah, we're not hearing
now?
Anything. Well, talk right now because we aren't hearing anything for a while there.
Okay. I filed a complaint against Morris Hardick Snyder, who's a law firm for Bank of New York Mellon. They filed a foreclosure case against me. They filed it. I filed a lawsuit against them for FDCPA, FCCPA.
They filed a motion to dismiss. I did a response. They did their response, and that's where it was left. Well, I want to go ahead and add the defendants, Bank of New York Mellon and Bayview Loan Servicing. So I went to go ahead and do that. The clerk told me that I need to file a motion to amend that complaint. Which I wasn't
What the clerk is telling you is you need to file a motion for leave to amend, but when they haven't answered, is that your original complaint, or did you already amend it once?
That's the original complaint.
It's the original complaint. It's kind of odd, but evidently, did you look at your local rules to find out what they said regarding amending?
I'm still looking through the local rules, but I don't see anything relating to that exactly.
Well, there can't be any local rules that contravene federal rules of civil procedure. The clerk
right.
was just wrong.
Yeah. Because until they've answered, you can amend as a matter of right. Isn't that correct, Larry?
Yeah, you can amend once, sure.
Said that since the party was already served, that I could not amend the complaint, which I'd be confused, and I'm like, what are you talking
yeah.
about?
There's no confusion. The clerk is wrong.
The clerk is wrong.
All right.
It wouldn't be the first time that a clerk has been wrong on something. And what you need to do is look up your federal rule and what it says as far as amending complaints. And you might, if you go back down there, take a copy of that, print it off and take a copy of that part of the rule and go down and tell them, look, here's the rules. They haven't answered. Therefore, I don't have to file a motion for leave to amend, which is what she was trying to tell you, he or she was trying to tell you you had to do.
Yeah.
And if they give you any static, just say, well, I think I need to talk to your supervisor.
Okay.
Because what you're telling me is contrary to the federal rules of civil procedure.
Okay. Beautiful.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Yeah, your phone's breaking up really, really bad. I hope you can hear us better than we can hear you.
Yes, I know. I got bad reception. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot. All right. Let's go to 817, and I got a feeling that might be Keisha.
Hi, I think this is Andy.
817, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
I think so. Go ahead and talk a little more.
This is Andrew. I had a quick TCPA question.
Yeah.
Okay.
I got your email. I just didn't have any time to do anything with it. I was busy doing stuff before the call.
All right. Well, I've successfully litigated a few other TCPA cases, and I had this attorney send me an email. I just wanted to get your guys' feedback. Essentially, I've got a couple of cell phones, and he's saying that I committed fraud because over the past 6 months.
Yeah, because you filed some TCPA actions, right.
Yeah, and
then
threatened to, file a malicious lawsuit against me, but...
Well, he's doing his job. He's trying to defend his client.
Correct.
But,
so I just want to know, I think I'm confident that I understood that, I mean, there's just not... I just want to make sure, I guess I understand that he's just a bunch of smoke. He's just blowing a bunch of smoke at me. Just nothing.
Well,
kind of scared me.
Well, Andrew, what he alleged, he said on one of those that the defendant had talked to the client the day that you said they called you, and he said it was their phone number. What was the deal with that? Is that all BS or?
I got the phone, and I was finding the number, and I got a call at 10 o'clock that morning, but it's impossible for him to have, my position is I just saw an affidavit and state that at that time, this was my phone, and my number is impossible
right.
for him to speak to anybody else.
Yeah, well, how long had you had that phone number when you got that call? Had you just gotten the phone number, or maybe a week or two before, or what?
maybe a month. I'll be honest. I can't remember exactly when I got the phone, but I've had the phone for at least a month or so. I can't honestly give an exact date or time as to when I got the phone.
Something I'll suggest to people is if you get cell phones, you want to hang on to information about when you get it, like if you get a new cell phone and you activate it or something like that. You want to document that stuff so that if there's ever a question, you're challenged on it, you've got the documentation. Because I just went through that with a case, and they challenged it, said, well, you know, you don't have proof. Well, I had proof. I had all the information showing that it was my phone number, and I had the calls on the phone. I sent them color photographs of the display on the phone of the calls and everything, and I had to go through almost a year of nonsense before I got a settlement. But I had to prove it up. They did challenge it. So the way you'd have to do that is you have firsthand fact knowledge of when you got it, right?
Yes.
Okay, well, then do you think that anybody at one of those companies that you're suing would ever lie? Do you think a lawyer or somebody at the company would ever lie to get out of their liability?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, in a heartbeat they would. So you can't buy into their nonsense. You have to know your facts. That's why it's important that everybody understand the statute completely, and if you're going to deal with litigation, you need to have documentation. Make sure that you know for sure what you got, and don't make any frivolous claims. You know, I've had people in the case that I'm dealing with, I went through a whole bunch of stuff where they said I was making frivolous claims, this, that, so on and so forth. And I had to argue all of that. They put in a motion, I had to argue it, and I won because there's no evidence of it. And the reason is because I can document every claim that I make against somebody. It's not just something that comes out of the back of my head and it's like, ooh, let's see if I can, you know, hit somebody up for some money. So, with your information, yes.
Yeah, I have the case law and the facts straight, and just I just step back for a second, but I just want to make sure that it was just a bunch of smoke. It makes you think a little bit, but no. It's just a bunch of smoke.
Yeah, I'm going to reply to you regarding something in an email on that I just want to make a point to you on. So,
I'm pretty confident. You know, sometimes I just need the reassurance, maybe just to understand what I'm thinking. Yeah.
Well, you get something like that. You know, you're going to have them try and BS their way out of a case. I mean, you always keep in mind, and this is for everybody, it's their job to defend their client, and they're allowed to lie before the court. And they, you know, when you're a pro se litigant, they're going to try every angle, and I will tell you that the law firm that you're dealing with, I'm familiar with them. They're here in Dallas. They're not a slouchy, sleazy law firm. So, you know, they're just doing their job. That's all. They're BSing.
All right. Okay, guys.
Okay?
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you. You bet. Okay. Let's go to see if I can get my eyes to work good enough here. 864. And come on, I'm trying to unmute you in. It's, man, TalkShoe's not wanting to do it here. There we go. 864, you've been unmuted.
It's not TalkShoe, Dave.
Or, I mean, Blog Talk, yeah. 864, you are unmuted. You have a question for us.
Yes, no question.
Hello? If you're there, you're breaking up so bad we can't even hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Not really, no. Yeah, we're not hearing anything. I don't know, you may want to try a different phone or something, because we're just not hearing you at all.
Yeah, what about now?
I heard what you said there.
Okay.
Yeah, you need to talk to us. We got to keep moving here.
All right. Well, here's
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. You're breaking up real bad. We're not hearing what you're saying. Please try getting in the queue. Call in on another number or something, because what you're on right now, we just can't hear you. Evidently, your signal is just so bad.
All right.
We've got to go on to the next caller. Okay, we're going to go to, unfortunately, that's just not working. That's one of the things about cell phones. Let's go to 503. You've been unmuted.
Hello?
Go ahead, please. Hello?
Hello?
We're hearing you. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm a newbie, and I'm out in Oregon, and I'm dealing with Dynamic Recovery Solutions. They pulled my credit report on the 31st of the year. I just found it out. I ran my free credit reports. They've called me 5 times on my cell phone. They don't have permission. My cell phone is on the do not call list. My question is, I got a couple, but they didn't use a robocaller, and I don't pay. I have Cricket. I don't pay for the usage of my cell phone. I pay a flat rate per month. Does the do not call list mean anything in all this?
Of course it does. If you're on the do not call list, it means that they can't call you, right?
I thought so, sir.
Okay. All right. Do you have an established business relationship with a debt collector?
No, sir, I don't. And they have no permission. I live into the videos. So where do I go for the do not call? Do I run that do not call list thing there through, on the website? I'm on the do not call list, the website, and it will prove it. So is there something that I could get from them for doing that or what?
Well, you evidently still don't. Haven't fully studied the TCPA. C5
okay.
is where the private right of action is in the TCPA. Now, a question. They are calling you. Are they calling you about a debt that you had, or that they're trying to find someone else?
They're trying to find me, and this is the funny part. It's 18 years ago. I'm in Oregon. This happened, allegedly, might have happened in the state of Illinois 18 years ago.
Whoa.
So they stopped when I talked to a woman, but they did call me 5 times and left messages, and they didn't say that they were a debt collector. Just call Joe Smith or Jane Smith, gave a phone number, and I have my Cricket records that I got from Cricket. Of the phone calls. They called on a local statewide number, an Oregon number, a 971 number.
I'd like to ask the caller a question, David.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay, they called you on a debt that was 18 years ago, right?
Yes, sir, in another
have
state.
Have you been through the frequently violated FDCPA guidelines?
No, I've gone through it. I haven't studied it enough. I should go back, right? Okay.
Yes, you should.
Yeah, the FDCPA, the frequently violated FDCPA guidelines, obviously, is FDCPA as opposed to TCPA, because you've got violations under FDCPA with what's occurred, but
rather
than us to rattle some stuff off, you need to study so that you understand it, so when you go after them, they try and BS you and tell you, oh, well, there's no violation with what we did, that you don't let them BS you because you come from the place of knowledge.
The pulling the call report, I've heard it said on the calls, is worth about 1,000.
Well, the private right of action under TCPA, here again, if you study the TCPA, go through Terry's webinar series that she did, which was excellent. The private right of action is $1,000 on TCPA. It's $1,000 on FDCPA. And, the calls, they're a different story. So, you know, you're looking at violations under 3 different statutes. But you need to understand those statutes.
Okay, it's on the website, what lies in my debt. I just have to poke around and then look around for the FDCPA, right?
FDCPA, Fair Debt Collection Practices Act.
Okay.
And you'll find the guidelines in the taking their money section.
Okay, I have to go through it again. Also, one other quick question. I'm paying Chase credit card. I've never been in collection with Chase credit card. I pay each and every month. They close my account. I'm paying every month. They pulled my credit report too, so I guess that would fall under that or not.
No.
No, they're an original creditor, and they can do account reviews.
Okay, I figured that. All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for your service and your help this evening. I'll call again when I've done more research. Thank you.
They can call if it's an entity of Chase.
Clarify that, Larry, if you would, please.
If it's the right entity of Chase, they can pull it, if it's the one you actually owe money to.
I'm pretty sure it is. It's Chase Card Services. I owe them, but I'm always paid up. But I see what you're saying. The original creditor can call and do that. These are debt collectors, like Dynamic Recovery Solutions, that bought a Shell Oil credit account that was from 1993 or 1994. It's unbelievable.
Larry's point was that there could be any one of 10 different Chase divisions that's pulling your credit report. Did the right one pull it?
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out.
That's a good idea.
Yep.
Thank you.
You're in the right place. You need more study, and you're picking it up, and that's why we've got the calls to help answer the questions and fit things together that you learn on the website. So, welcome.
Thank you again. Bye-bye.
You bet. All right. Let's go to 970. Come on, here, Blog Talk. I'm still used to Talk Shoe. I've used it for almost 5.5 years. Jeez. 970, you've been unmuted.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. I just needed some information about credit reports because I went to try to get a loan for a car because mine got smashed. And they were saying that they wouldn't loan me any money because of a Bank of America account that's shown up. I don't see it when I pull my report. I mean, I show that it was charged off. They're saying it's still open and that there's like $1,200 a month due on it. And when I look at the credit report, I don't see that at all. Do you have any ideas about that? Yeah, because it's
showing
it's
charged
off,
but it doesn't show an outstanding balance.
Well, it shows that there was a balance, a past due balance, which isn't the same as my
Then they're telling you correctly.
Yeah,
okay.
a charge off does not mean a debt disappears. That's strictly just an accounting function. It doesn't mean the debt goes away.
Okay.
You know, some people misinterpret that and think, oh, well, they charge it off, then the debt's gone. No, that's not the case.
Okay,
so,
and now it's been 7 years. That's a faulty date. Actually, the date they stuck in there that says that it was opened is actually when I quit paying it. But it's been 7 years. Is there anything I can do to clean it up?
Well, are you a member? Well, hang on a second, Jeff. Are you a member?
Well, I was. I just finally got a job, so I'll become a member again.
Okay. Yeah. I know how that goes. What I would suggest very strongly is get started on your membership, and then you want to go into the archived webinars. And Terry just recently did an 8-segment series of webinars on everything you need to know about the FCRA, about your credit reports. And it is extremely detailed and comprehensive, and that will just help you answer about just about every question you have, and any that you don't have, you can come on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday calls, and we'll try and help you.
That's great, because I know Terry does a wonderful job, so I look forward to that.
Yes, she does. Yep. She did a great job on it. It was very detailed.
Okay. That's what I'll do.
All righty. That take care of you?
Okay, guys. Lay off. You're going to give me a big old fat head.
No, we...
Okay. All right. We're going to go to 207. 207, you've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Beverly in Maine.
Hi,
and
Beverly.
I had a string of bad luck like yourself. I landed myself in the hospital. And when you go there, they scare the hell out of you, let me tell you. So I'm behind in my legal papers, and I asked for a little more time in one case, and they gave me 7 days. Today I talked to them at the doctor's again, and I said, what I did was I made a mistake. I had a toothache, and I took some penicillin and some ibuprofen, and it brought on internal bleeding.
Oh, boy.
And, yeah, it was pretty serious. So I had transfusions, and I get lightheaded, you know. So it's not a senior moment. So I, you know, I'm going to ask tomorrow for 30 days. But I have, like, the second appeal on a foreclosure matter where the plaintiff Nation Star never had the correct assignment. And halfway through the foreclosure, they went to the Registry of Deeds and they recorded a corrective assignment. And we filed a motion to vacate the judgment. And the judge threw it out and said, if I file any more motions, he's going to be all upset. So I appealed that. And so I'm kind of like at the end of the road on this. And at the same time, I'm going to file motions to disbar the attorney that brought forth this action.
Inappropriate.
Well, yeah, really? you can't do that. Yeah. You don't go into the court and file a motion to disbar an attorney. That happens. That goes through the Bar Association.
Well,
you're going to have to make a
bar
complaint about the lawyer.
I'll send it to the bar. This guy has a license in 3 states, one of them, and the other one is in 2. And she came up here, this woman, and paid the Maine Appellate Court $600 so that she could, I don't know what she did, because nothing ever happened after she paid that $600. They just dismissed it. They said order foreclose, order foreclose in order to sell, So you're saying not to do the...
No, you can't go to the court.
If you want to get yourself into a great deal of trouble with the court, file a motion to disbar.
Yeah, that's not appropriate. That's not how you do it. You have to make your complaint to the Bar Association, formal complaint.
I don't know if you know this, but in Maine we have probably the most corrupt court.
Everybody from every state says that.
Oh, yeah. I know your courts up there are very corrupt. I'm very aware of that, but they're corrupt all over the country. So, you know, unfortunately, you don't have a corner on the market there. It's rampant everywhere.
So I say to myself then, sir, why are you wasting your time, Beverly? Because, I mean, I was sick, you know. I was thinking about this. So I was like, this is really what you want to be doing there, you know.
Do you have a specific question for us? Because that's what we got. We got to stay on point with questions because we got a lot
My
of people that
is,
want to ask.
If we have, like, so right here I have a 5th District Court of Appeals wrongful assignment in a deed of trust. That was a case that was kind of recent, and I sent those all before. Do I send them again with this appeal, or am I just sending it hoping that the mood is going to be different? I mean, what do I do with this wrongful assignment?
There's no way I personally, and I don't know if there's anybody else on this call that can really give you an answer because we don't know anything about your case. We don't have any of the details. We don't know what your local rules are. We don't know what your state rules are. You have to understand your rules and follow the rules on the procedures. Otherwise, the courts are just going to they're going to ignore you or they're going to dismiss any filings, any motions, or I should say deny any motions that you file, whether it be the appellate court or the lower-level court. If you don't follow their rules...
It's the same thing with the other states, which, you know, you can't change. After the case is started, you can't change a plaintiff's name unless you go before the judge and ask to change it, make the correction, amend it, whatever. They're principally the same laws, but they don't get it here.
Yeah, but here again, like I said, you know, your question was, what can you do? We don't begin to have enough information to even make a suggestion because we don't know what your state rules are. We don't know what the rules of your court are. We don't know exactly when you did what. And it's just too large a question for us to be able to answer. It's too general. So all I, the best thing that I can suggest to you is you need to make sure that you study and understand both the rules for your state courts that you're dealing with as well as the rules of appellate procedure. Because if you do not follow, and especially when you're dealing with appeals, if you do not follow the rules of appellate procedure, they will bounce your appeals very easy. They will reject them. There's no question. I've seen it happen. They're real sticklers at the appellate level about procedure and making sure you do things right. They just don't want to deal with a bunch of, you know, oddball filings that are not following the rules. And they refuse to, actually. So.
And the other thing is that on your appeal, you can only point out the errors that the judge made or that the court made. You cannot raise or plead any of your causes. None.
Yeah, you can't go in and re-argue any of your causes of action. The only thing you do on appeal is strictly point out to the appeals court an error by the lower court. And you had to have objected to what they were doing, or that had to be a blatant error, one of the two. Okay, does that help you out some? I mean, that's about the most we can help you with, given what your question was. Okay?
Yeah. Is there anybody I can talk to, like, tomorrow or something?
No, there aren't any of us that do anything individually. We just don't have time. We're up to our ears now. I'm sorry.
I had a rough week, and it's just going to have to go the way it's ready because I'm tired. Hey, all right. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, we're going to go to 404. You've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Okay. This is interesting. Their motion to dismiss my FDCPA case, the attorneys are pulling the letter they sent me, the debt letter. I can't even say it. I'm so exhausted, I can't even say it right.
Dunning notice?
Yes, thank you. The Dunning notice to me. October 4th, and in their motion to dismiss, they say that because that letter was sent on the 4th and I filed my complaint on the 5th, the statute of limitation has run out.
What? No, it's 1 year from your receipt of a Dunning letter, not the date that they write it.
Wait a minute. They said that they have to take it the next day, but the violation isn't from the Dunning letter itself. It's from them continuing to sue me after I sent a debt validation letter. Correct?
Well, I don't know. It's your lawsuit.
That's what the lawsuit's based on, is the fact that I wanted them to validate the debt. They didn't validate the debt, and they continued to attempt to collect the debt over and over and over.
Right.
And
okay.
They started that on the 7th of November. But the letter was sent in October.
Yeah, but Sherry, they're arguing, they're saying we sent the letter to you on the 4th. The letter was dated the 4th of October, and you waited till the 5th of October a year later to sue, right? Am I understanding that? That's what they're saying.
5th of November. Yeah, 5th of November. Yes, that's right.
Well, no, wait a minute. What do you mean November?
After they refused to validate and they continued to collect the debt, that's when the violation came in.
No. I need to pin down dates here to clarify this.
All right.
When did you receive the Dunning letter?
October 10th, 2004.
What year?
2010, yeah, or 12, okay. All right. October 10th, 2012, when did you send the validation letter?
October 25th.
Okay, you sent it approximately Yeah. 2 weeks after you got the Dunning letter.
Correct. Within the 30 days.
Right. Okay, so you did that timely, and they either had to validate or stop collecting the debt by law, right?
Right.
Okay, now let's go to their motion to dismiss. Specifically, what are they arguing on the statute of limitations issue?
They're saying that because they sent the Dunning letter on the October 4th, and they have to use the date the following day as the date that I received it, which is the 5th, does the statute
that's
of limitations
nonsense.
Run out?
No.
Well, that's nonsense. You don't
on
use the next
fact,
day.
Well,
you know well,
what's
Sherry,
even funnier? They mailed it on the 8th of October, which was a holiday. Their little stamp on their letter, because I kept the envelopes, right?
Yeah, okay, but you're making this way too difficult for yourself. Your
well,
argument
I just
is
wanted
very
to make sure I understood what I was doing, because I thought, what, you know what they're doing, and they've done already with personal jurisdiction, et cetera, and now they're saying the statute of limitations. I said, well, they haven't validated
well,
anything yet. They can send a letter.
Well,
right?
but don't make this difficult. Do you know what smoke and mirrors are?
Yeah, there's smoke and mirrors.
Okay, well then just argue it with facts. You didn't receive.
I just wanted to make sure I hadn't screwed up the rules, that's all.
No, you received the Dunning letter on October 10th of 12. You sent the debt validation letter on the 25th. It was sent within the 30 days. All right. Now, the violation that you are alleging that they committed happened when?
November 7th, when they served me with the lawsuit.
What November year? 7th? Hey, Jeff, hang on. Let me just follow through. What was it, November of that year?
Yes.
Okay. What is the statute of limitations on FDCPA?
1 year from the violation.
Right. So 1 year from that violation would be November of 13. When did you file your lawsuit?
November 5th of 2013. 2 days before the year was up.
No.
Now, they filed the lawsuit what date?
November 7th. I got it November 7th. Whatever it is, that's when I got the date. They left the papers at the house. Nobody got served.
Okay. So they took a collection action, and you received the collection notice in whatever form on November 7th. November 7th. So within a year later, 2 days before a year later, you filed your lawsuit.
Correct.
Okay. As far as I see, that would be inside the statute of limitations. Larry, you see any issue with that? Or do you see where they try and construe that as saying, well, it was the date the lawsuit was filed was the actual collection action as opposed to their service?
No, like you said, it's very simple and straightforward.
Yeah,
I mean, there's so much smoke and mirrors right now that I'm looking at this like I don't know anything anymore.
Well, no,
you're
letting yourself
bad.
Get confused. Well, you're letting yourself get confused instead of keeping it simple. You've got to get yourself back down to what is the law, what do they do, what are they saying I did, they're full of crap, and you argue it. It's
okay.
You just do
okay.
that.
All right.
Yeah,
you
point out the facts to the court, and if you wanted to, you could do an affidavit and put it with your response. That would strengthen your response.
Oh, speaking of affidavits.
Stay on the topic and don't change it until you're
sure you're No, the affidavit on this. Speaking of an affidavit, I have filed affidavits in the court case already. I mean, no, I was in my foreclosure suit.
It doesn't,
okay,
it
so
doesn't
what
matter.
I, what would I stick to with the affidavit? What would I focus on? What details? Because the facts are already in the case.
Now, you put, when you write your response and you state that, you know, I received the Dunning letter on this date. I sent the demand for validation on this date. They filed suit on this date. Then in your affidavit, you say, affiant received a Dunning letter on this date. In other words, you just put the same facts in affidavit form and send it with it, because what you're doing then, instead of just stating it on paper, is you're putting sworn testimony and accompanying it. And then they'd have
okay.
to have sworn testimony to refute it.
Well, the other thing is, the fact that they said they mailed it on the 8th, which was a holiday, shows their
well,
credibility.
It doesn't matter what it does
it?
Not.
No.
Sherry, it doesn't matter on when they said. The clock starts when you receive it.
Okay.
And if you state
no, I mean,
under
I just
oath. No, keep it simple. You're trying to make it too difficult here. It starts on the date that you receive it. If it doesn't matter what date that they send it, if you don't receive it till a week later, you don't know about it and can't take any action till a week later, right?
Correct.
Common sense tells us that. So they try and use the trick and said, oh, well, the letter was dated the 4th. And you filed on the 5th, so, you know, it's outside the statute of limitations. No, maybe your letter was dated the 4th. Did you hand deliver it to me? No, it comes by mail. I got it, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 days later. You go by when you got it, and you are the one that can testify to firsthand fact information as to when you receive something. They can't. You can. The only way they can testify that you got it is if they sent it certified mail and they've got that sheet from the Postal Service that says, yeah, she got it on the 5th at 10:42 a.m. And they don't have that, of course, because they didn't send it. So don't make this hard, please.
Okay. All right. Well, I just, you know, I just wanted to make sure I was clear in my head because it
yep.
was ridiculous.
Yep.
Thank you guys
okay.
so much.
All
Sorry,
right. You're
bye.
Welcome. All right, let's go to, we're going to go to 817, and maybe that's Keisha, I don't know. 817, you've been unmuted. 817-682, you've been unmuted. You got to speak
that's
up.
Me. That's me, guys, I was muted. I had to
okay.
get off mute.
Get with the program there, Keisha.
I know. Okay, I have a question regarding, I know I heard earlier somebody say something about a balance that they had on a card. So if there was a balance, I just want to make sure I'm clear. If it was a balance that was left on a card, even though the card is closed, it still gives whatever entity a right to pull your credit. Is that like what I heard correctly? Because the account's
closed. You didn't
like
hear that from us.
Okay, I thought I heard that. So
no,
I was
you didn't hear that from us.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You know, you need to sharpen that listening pencil.
Okay, so if the account is closed, I can still go for FCRA violation.
It depends upon who pulled it.
Well, it was the original creditor who pulled the account. I mean, like, who pulled my credit, but the account is closed. But there was a balance that was on the account when it was closed.
Well, I believe then they can do that as an account review because there's still an account. There's nothing that says an account has to be open. If there's no balance, then there's no account. Right?
Right.
But
yeah,
if there is a balance...
Sure.
And, yeah, okay. And if they sold it to, you know, Midland or Portfolio or somebody, then they don't own it anymore. Therefore, they would have no permissible purpose, right?
Right. Now, see, this
but
is what
if,
happened. Like, Folio Recovery Management was calling me regarding this particular account. And then, you know, they failed to validate. I'm going, you know, obviously I told them to send me something in writing. I never got it. But anyway, they must have sent it back to the original creditor or something. I think it was,
no.
I don't know, I'm just assuming that it was probably
No, Keisha, you're making an assumption, and that assumption is absolutely wrong. Because Portfolio Recovery is a debt buyer.
Okay.
They
okay,
don't
that's
buy
what I was
something,
trying to figure out.
Try and collect it, and then send it back. See what happens when you make assumptions. I keep telling everybody, don't make assumptions, because quite often they're going to be erroneous. Deal with facts. You are dealing with Portfolio. That means that original creditor sold that account. And if they sold the account, they no longer own it. Therefore, they could no longer have a permissible purpose to obtain your credit report, right?
Right. Okay. That's right. I mean, I understand that. Okay, so that's where I just wasn't, I mean, I wasn't sure and clear about, I don't want to file the lawsuit, obviously, and then it's, you know, they did have permission, and sometimes I know they do it on a contingency basis on giving it out. But I guess the only way I would find that out is through discovery.
Well, Portfolio, you have to understand who you're dealing with, and that's why we talk about this all the time. There are certain companies that are known to be debt buyers. Portfolio Recovery buys debts. They don't do contingency collections for companies.
I did read that on their website, but I think I just wasn't clear with what I was reading.
Well,
it's
real clear. They only buy things, which means by simple deduction, if they bought it, that original creditor no longer has it. Therefore, they don't have a permissible purpose to pull your credit report because they don't own the account anymore.
Okay, yeah, I did print that off their website, too, that they were the number one debt buy-in agency and everything.
Yeah, they
were calling my phone.
Yep.
Yeah, they were calling my phone, too, so thanks. I appreciate
it. There you go. Okay.
All right.
Take care of you.
Yep.
All right.
You know.
Bye-bye. Okay, we're going to go to 804. 804,
Hello.
You've been unmuted.
Hello, how you doing?
Doing pretty good. How are you?
All right. This is my very first call. I'm a new baby to what's going on. Only a few days, but.
Well, welcome.
Of course, Max. Yeah, glad you have me. Just a quick question on my mother-in-law had passed away about 4 years ago, and my brother-in-law and my wife, I think they obtained the deed. I think they deeded to them, but it was still a mortgage on the home, and we paid with the life insurance, the first mortgage, but there's still a second mortgage on the property, about $45,000. And Bank of America they continue to contact my wife, even though we pay it. She says she'll pay it. You know, if it's 20 days late, she don't care. But she pays it every month. But they keep contacting her via cell phone as well as letters. If the mortgage is in her mother's, is still in her mother's name, and they put in care of on the new statements that come out and put her name on the statement, is that legal?
Well, yeah, they're just sending it to so-and-so in care of somebody else.
Okay.
That person's name. Yeah, there's not a problem with that I'm aware
of. Okay. What about the aspect of if the loan, I know we have to pay the mortgage because the mortgage is tied to the home, but how does that work? As far as them contacting her, telling her to make the payment.
Well, usually it's the other way around. You contact them so you can make the payments.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if they're contacting you about making payments, it means you're late. Otherwise, they'd be happy campers, and they wouldn't have any reason to call you. If you're going to make the payments, I would say that it would be in your best interest to get things caught up and pay them on time every month.
Okay. Now, as far as if the mortgage is in her mother's name, do we have to do refinance or something, just get in her name?
No, you leave it alone.
Okay.
You should find a provision for heirs in the mortgage. Go read it.
Okay.
Yeah. Get a copy of the mortgage, and go read in there and look for information regarding heirs. And how things are handled in the event of a death or something like that.
Okay, all right. All right, well, I appreciate everything, man. Enjoy listening to the call then.
All righty. You're very welcome.
In fact, I would suggest when you get to that mortgage,
yes, sir.
Copy it word for word by hand.
Yeah, it helps you get a grasp on it instead of just reading.
Okay. Because the thing that was confusing me was if it's not in my wife's name, and they're trying to, I mean, I don't know, I know we had to pay it because if you don't pay it, they can foreclose on the house.
Well,
but my wife
of course, but it depends, here again, it depends on what the language is in the mortgage. That's why Jeff is saying go read it very carefully and understand it.
Okay.
All right?
All right, I appreciate it.
That's why they got those documents. See, the big problem is the people in this country don't read documents. They just sign things without reading them, and then when they got to deal with something, it's like, well, you know, I don't know why this is happening. Well, did you read these documents? Well, no, I just signed them. That's the big mistake.
Right.
Now, in this case, your wife wouldn't have signed things, but it's something that she's involved in because she's an heir. So you have to go and look at the paperwork and see what the documents say.
Okay.
It's not something we're used to doing. It's something new that people in this country have to wake up and start doing. It's very important. You need to understand what you're dealing with, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. All right.
You're very welcome.
Bye-bye.
All right. If anybody else has questions tonight, hit the one key on your keypad. We've got a couple more people in the queue here. We're going to go to 619. 619, you've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hey, guys, how's it going tonight?
Pretty good.
Good. Just a quick question about a federal suit that I filed on August 21st. I got these. Well, I'm going to get the package from the court as soon as you file, and I got the notice of assignment. You normally get that.
Oh,
right?
Whoa! I'm confused already. You get a package from the court, and I got a notice of assignment. What are you talking about?
It's called the notice of assignment. To the United States judges.
Okay, the judge's assignment, okay.
Right, and I'm just noticing at the bottom it says, attention, a copy of this notice must be served on all parties served with a summons and complaint. But I had already sent my summons and complaint to, the debt collector, the attorney. And so
I think you need to go back and read that a little more carefully.
Yeah. Yeah, that notice...
Well, hang
on a second. What I think what's on that is they're just saying that this needs to be sent, but if the court issued that to you, they sent it to all the parties.
That's what I figured. Yeah, I figured they sent it to all parties, but and I thought that maybe I sent my summons and complaint off to, to the other party before I got this packet, and I should have waited or something like that.
No.
This
stuff comes as a result of your filing the lawsuit.
Right. Okay.
Okay. How could you need to do this before you filed your lawsuit? This never would have happened if you hadn't filed your lawsuit.
Exactly. Yeah, I figured, they got the same package that I got, and it says, attention, a copy of this notice must be served on all parties. Well, I figured it was since it came straight from the court.
Exactly. Yeah. So you got to just kind of look at the obvious.
Which circuit are you in?
The ninth.
Okay. Oh, California.
Yep.
Amongst others.
Right. So what is your question on things then, other than that?
Basically my question was, well, should I just take a copy of what I have now and send it out to them real quick because they might not have gotten it, but I'm pretty sure they got it. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's sent out by the court. And that was just a notice of assignment to what, a magistrate judge probably?
Yeah, the magistrate and both judges, but yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's just notifying you and the court sends it to the other parties as well.
Okay. That's okay.
Okay. All righty.
Thanks for clearing that up. All right, thank you.
You bet. Thank you. All right. We're going to go to 401. 401, you've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dave. Thanks very much. My name's Eric.
Hi, Eric.
Quick question.
How are you?
Hello. Good, thanks.
Did you say your name is Derek?
Eric.
Eric.
Yes, sir. I'm a little confused about contingency debt buyers. I think that's who I'm dealing with right now because I have
let me clarify. There is no such thing as a contingency debt buyer. There's contingency debt collectors.
Okay,
and
yeah,
then there are debt buyers. Though there's two completely different groups.
Okay. Yep, I misspoke, and I think I do understand that distinction.
Okay, all right, good.
So I think I'm dealing with a contingency debt collector because I have a couple of accounts that went past due that aren't quite 180 days, but we're real close. And I've been getting calls for the last couple of months from one in particular calls all the time. And I guess my question is, as a contingency debt collector, you know, do they have – sort of the same permissible purpose to call me that the original creditor would have?
There is no permissible purpose that's involved in phone calls. Permissible purpose is related only to the TCPA, the FCRA, for pulling someone's credit. On phone calls, have you studied the TCPA at least some?
Yes, I have.
Not? You have. Okay, all right. TCPA relates to, in large part, cell phones.
Yeah.
All right? And it relates to who has express consent to call your cell phone and who does not. Okay?
Okay.
If you have not given somebody express consent, they can't call your phone and use an auto dialer. All
right? Right.
Now, The law is very clear on that. Let's say, for instance, you had a credit card with Chase. And let's say you gave Chase your cell phone number.
Yeah.
And they turn that over to ABC Collections, a contingency collector, to call you. And, of course, what are they going to do? They're going to give them your cell phone number, aren't they?
Exactly, yeah.
Right. And they're going to call you. Now, is that a violation?
I got to say, that's exactly where I go.
That's your quandary. Yes, it's a violation because you have to stop and think. Who did you give express consent to? You gave it to Chase, correct?
Yes, in this case, Amex, but yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, we're going with the example that I was using. You gave it to Amex, but if ABC Collections is calling you, you never gave express consent to ABC Collections, did you?
No, I did not.
Amex can't give your express consent for them to call you to somebody else. That's not transferable.
Okay.
They'll tell you it is. They'll lie to you. And that's why it's so important for people to really know the statutes. You have to fully understand the statutes so that when you run into this kind of thing and somebody says, well, that transfers over from the original creditor, when they tell you that, they're BSing you. It's absolute BS.
Okay.
So the debt collector cannot call you.
And yet we have to caveat that just a little bit, don't we, Dave?
Meaning?
The new applications have that express consent for both the original creditor and any of their assigns.
That's the newer ones. Now, and I'm glad you brought that up, Jeff. That's a good point. Because most people right now, they're dealing with stuff. They're going to be dealing with things that they've had at least like maybe 3-4 years. And you didn't have the TCPA issues back then, so they didn't have that kind of language in those agreements. More recent times, if you've gotten a credit card within the last couple of years, you may have had that in there. And if you didn't catch it when you signed the account application, which more than likely you did not, what you have to do is write to them. I put it in writing. Whatever you do, you don't want to do it verbally because words evaporate. Write a letter to them and say, effective upon your receipt of this notice, I hereby revoke my consent for you to call phone number 1234567. I will never write a letter like that and say, I revoke my consent to call my cell phone. I will never put the word cell phone on that. You understand why I'm not going to do that?
Well, that would certainly raise a flag with them, I would think.
Well, yeah, that's why you do it. You guys continue the stuff real quick. I got to talk to a guy about my car here. Be right back.
Okie doke.
So let me ask you just one other question about this. And I had given Amex my original home number when I filled out the application years and years and years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So since then, that number has been assigned to my cell phone.
Okay, you got a problem.
It used to be a home number, but now it's a cell phone.
Yeah, you got a problem with that because they have no way of knowing that.
I know. Yeah, I understand. So what I was thinking was that really my only way to really get them would be to send them a letter, a cease and desist letter, telling them to stop calling that because it is a cell phone, and then just hope that they do.
Not to stop calling it, but not because it's a cell phone, just to stop calling it.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll call you on the superfluous language so that your language starts to clear up and clean up. Okay?
I had done that with another creditor who I wasn't in default with, but they were calling me a lot. I was behind a little bit on my payments and... I sent them a cease and desist letter, and they stopped calling altogether. So, I hate sending those letters out because obviously we want the calls. But because my number used to be a landline and now it's a cell phone.
Yeah. Who's the contingency debt collector that's calling you?
United Recovery Systems.
I'm not familiar with them.
Yeah, they're burning up my phone. I mean, every day they've called. I probably have 50 or 60 calls just over the last 30 days.
Okay.
And half of them are those, if you're this person, press 1. If you're not this person, press 2.
I understand. So you're kind of in my area code. That's what made me. That's what prompted the question.
You're in Rhode Island?
Oh, I thought you said you were in 401.
Yeah, 401 is Rhode Island.
Okay. Now, I'm thinking 410. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's Maryland, is that?
Yeah.
I work
for I'm back, guys.
I have a lot of codes.
All right.
The gist of my question. I really appreciate your help.
You're welcome.
Everything squared away there?
Well, his complication, Dave, is that he had his landline transferred over to his cell phone.
So he needs
to actually put that put it in writing.
Yeah, they've got 15 days on a transfer where there's no violation. If they call after that, it is a violation. There's case law on that.
Oh, well, good. I didn't know about that, Dave.
That's in the TCPA case law that I put on the website. That whole list of good TCPA
stuff.
Good
violations?
Yeah. Yeah. It's 15 days.
The language of the TCPA really only says that they can't call any number that is assigned to a cellular service.
Assigned to a cellular service.
Yeah, stop and think about it. If you had a landline and you changed it, you know, and a lot of people are doing this, and you changed it to a cell phone, all right?
Yeah, yeah.
If they call within the first 2 weeks, there's no violation. If they call after that, there's a violation.
I had to go back
because
and take a look at that
case. Because you didn't give them express consent to call that cell phone number.
I wonder how they would ever be notified that a number was changed, though, you know? They could just make a mistake.
They're supposed to scrub things, and that's part of the problem that they have and why they're freaking out over all of this stuff.
And it's an automated machine that's calling him, and it's United Recovery.
Oh, okay. Jeez, that's no surprise. Yeah.
And they didn't scrub it either.
Yeah. Yeah, see, if they had scrubbed it, they would have known. How long ago did you switch from landline to cell?
Oh, it was years ago. I had the accounts opened back in, like, 2004, and then around 2009, I changed the numbers over. So it's been about 5 years. But I never notified.
You don't have to. You don't have to. It's their responsibility to scrub a phone number to find out whether it's a cell.
Oh, okay. Great.
And so there's case law on it.
And that's just an added expense that they don't want to go to.
Well, that's
yeah, that costs them money to do that kind of stuff.
When they call and all they're saying on the other line is, if you're this person, press 1. If you're that person, press 2. Operator.
That's a no-no.
That doesn't matter whether it's a cell phone or not, right?
Yeah, well, they're leaving a pre-recorded.
Right.
Actually pre-recorded, is it? Does that come up on your answering machine? Or your voice?
Oh, yeah, they leave. I never catch the very beginning of it. I guess the
record. Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. You've got violations there. Based on what you've said there, I definitely would think that you have violations. That's my opinion.
You know what was very strange? I was just, because I'm trying to keep accurate records of all this stuff, because I've really got a lot of calls going on. They actually called me on 2 numbers. The same person left me a message. It doesn't sound pre-recorded. It sounds like a human speaking, but I got the same call. It was logged at the exact same time on 2 different numbers from the same person leaving the same message on the same day. So two of my phones were ringing at the same time from 2 different telephone numbers, and the same person left the same message. When I play them at the same time, they sound exactly the same.
Well, what does that tell you? It's ATDS, using an automated message.
Yeah, it tells me that they have to have something going on there.
Well, of course. You know, all you got to do is throw a little common sense on it and let it bloom. It is.
The phone company recorded it exact same time, 2 different numbers.
Okay, well, we got your stuff covered. We still got some people in the queue, and we want to try and cover everybody before the end of the call.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right. You're very welcome. All right. I can see tomorrow I'm going to have to start going car shopping. All right. We're going to go to somebody that's got their number blocked or they're on Skype. If somebody's got their number blocked or you're on Skype, speak up, because all I've got is 1111111111. Into oblivion.
Is that me?
It must be you, because nobody else would have been unmuted with you. Good evening.
Okay, hi, how you doing?
Well, I was doing better until I found out the engine in my car locked up on Saturday. It's not worth spending the money on that, so I got to go car hunting.
Damn,
and let a debt collector buy my car.
Well, that's a good thing.
That's a real good thing.
Yes, guys, I'd like you to kind of clear my head and make sure that I understand it. Now, when you file an action in a court, aren't you giving them personal jurisdiction?
What do you mean, aren't you giving them personal jurisdiction?
Okay, I had an original creditor file a statement of claim in their state, which is Pennsylvania, and I live in New Jersey. So I didn't receive the paperwork, so they got a judgment by default. So I have to file a petition to open, is what it's called in Pennsylvania. But my thoughts are, once you file something, then you're giving them personal jurisdiction, aren't you?
Well, if you want it vacated, you better.
Well, yeah, you you can't avoid that.
Okay. But I'm just saying they're still forcing me to defend in another state.
That's strange. Jeff,
they're still forcing you to do what, please, in another state?
To defend.
Check to see, did you put it in as a special appearance?
No, I haven't done anything yet. I've just been getting
look
to
the
bottom.
Look up the law for special appearance for Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So that you can actually enter into the Pennsylvania courts without necessarily giving them in personam jurisdiction and tell them that they don't have in personam jurisdiction and never have had in personam jurisdiction.
Okay. So
and
I,
they can't get can't get personal jurisdiction until the case is brought in New Jersey.
Into the proper jurisdiction.
Okay. So I'm going to look and see if they have something called special appearance.
A special appearance.
Okay. I know they have something called defendant appearance. And I'm thinking, like, once I do that petition to open and...
You're not going to petition to open, you're going to petition to vacate.
No, that's not what it's called there. So you know I'm about bad because I'm just trying to understand the New Jersey rules, and I had to jump into Pennsylvania, and they're totally different. But it is called a petition to open. And I can't get it online. I have to go downtown Philadelphia to file it. And it asked me three things. It asked me, why did I miss the hearing, if it was done timely, and I have to have a meritorious defense.
Well, yeah, you just got to be able to explain that, you know, you were never served, you knew nothing about it, you didn't find out about the judgment until after it occurred. And therefore,
and you were living in another state.
Yeah, you were living in another state, and you were denied due process. You never lived there in Pennsylvania, did you?
Well, not years before this was with them.
They knowingly filed in Pennsylvania so they could get a default judgment. You got an FDCPA violation there.
Even though it's OC? Original creditor.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, that doesn't matter. They can't do that. I mean, that would be like me living here in Dallas and somebody suing me up in St. Paul, Minnesota, and getting a judgment against me. They can't do that.
Well, that's what
they did. Improper venue.
They have my Jersey address on it.
But it all boils down to its improper venue. The court had no jurisdiction because there was no proper service, and the judgment is void. But you just got to put the facts out in front of the court to get that accomplished. You just lay out the facts. You were never served. You don't live in Pennsylvania. You've lived in New Jersey for many years, you know, whatever. And you got no notice of the lawsuit. You've been denied due process because you were never served.
And the court never established in personam jurisdiction.
Right. The court lacks jurisdiction to enter any judgment against you.
Okay.
Yep, that's what you just got to make those arguments up front, and you have to put an affidavit with it and state those points under oath. I have lived in New Jersey for the last, you know, 19 years, 26 years, whatever. At the time of this action in Pennsylvania, I did not live there. I have not lived there. I was not served by any party. Take all your points and put them in affidavit form and then sign it. And always remember, with your affidavit, it can't be anything, well, because they did this, then such and such and so and so. You can't say that. Any statements that you put in an affidavit have to be just statements of fact. I did not
right.
live in Pennsylvania. I was not served with any notice of this lawsuit,
right.
so on and so forth.
Well, what they did was they sent me a certified mail, which I didn't get, so it was returned. And then in their paperwork, they put a copy of where they also mailed it to me by first-class mail, which I didn't get either. So
where did they mail it to?
This, it has this address. That the first-class envelope looked a little quirky, though, but anyway, that's
all
what
right,
they
so
attached.
Did your agreement with the creditor say that they had sued where you live or a place where the contract was signed?
I've been I still have to research that, Jeff. Originally, I opened a share account with the credit union. And I think when I got this credit card, I applied over the phone. It's been so long ago, I really don't remember.
Yeah, well,
okay.
you're going to have to argue that, you know, they don't have jurisdiction because you live in New Jersey. You and you have to state, you know, in your affidavit, state in your motion to vacate void judgment that you didn't receive things and that you did not live there in Pennsylvania, and you're not going to say you were denied due process. Don't say that in your affidavit, because that's making an argument. That's an improper place. You'll state that in your motion. But keep in mind, again, I'm going to remind you, the affidavit has to be statements of fact. Okay?
Okay.
All right. That help you out?
It does. Thank you very much, guys.
All right. You're very welcome. All right. We're going to keep rolling here. We got a little bit more time. We got a few more people here. We're going to go to 864. You've been unmuted. Go ahead. 864. Going once, going twice. Muted. We're going to go to 321. 321, you've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. How are you, Dave?
Well, I'm okay.
Considering I heard you.
The engine of my car
I heard
went.
You had a couple of bumps and bruises.
Well, yeah, I got bumps and bruises, but the bigger thing now is the engine of my car locked up. Just found that out. So I got to go car hunting.
Yeah, make sure you put a new one in.
I don't want to spend the money. But that's life.
Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I said that's life. So what you got tonight?
Oh, I was just wondering, every time, is Larry still on the phone?
As far as I know, he's here.
I'm here.
I keep on seeing in the discovery, when you ask him in the interrogatory, they always say it's referred. But when I look up the definition, in the legal language, for instance, somebody pulling my credit. They're saying it was referred by Bank of America.
Oh, okay.
But I've never seen the word
referred. Yeah, what you're saying is they're stating that the account was referred to them for collection. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay.
Instead of transferred, assigned, or sold,
mm-hmm.
which I see in the cases all the time.
Right. Yeah,
so
what is the
question,
meaning of referred?
Right.
That's,
who referred
that's what
what
you're getting
who?
At, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Motion for a more definite statement.
Well, no, they're answering that in discovery.
Understood.
Yeah.
And my discovery is lengthy, so I have plenty of time to come up with creative ideas. And so far, they haven't answered anything very well.
Just do a follow-up for the definition and or take a deposition.
Right.
Right. Yeah, the deposition is definitely where I'm going, but that's with one guy. I don't know if I said this last Tuesday. But in their verification, the guy wrote, he didn't rely on his own knowledge and belief, but he relied on attorneys, representatives, and others.
Yeah.
We talked about that on the Wednesday webinar you had last week there. I mean, I thought that was just crazy.
Well, that's, well, just downright stupid, actually, in my book. I mean, that's the way I'd describe it. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. But then again, you know, they think, oh, well, this is a pro se litigant. We can give him a stupid answer, and he ain't going to know the difference.
Agreed.
That's what they count on.
I've gotten that many times.
Mm-hmm. Well, because most pro ses wouldn't, right?
Oh, correct.
I mean, most pro ses don't know much of anything about the courts, much less how to analyze or even do discovery, much less do it properly. Most pro se litigants don't even understand what it is.
In the good news tonight, I think Terry was saying something about being in a quandary, and you said, so have you and Jesse and John and Jeff and so on, and that's true, and so have I. My first one, I thought the same thing like everybody else thinks. I'll just file a lawsuit and I'll collect $1,000. Well, sometimes you have to pay attention, you have to read, and you have to listen.
Yeah, and most of the time you do have to do that. I mean, once in a while you can get away the other way, but that's not the way to do it at all. None of us suggest that's a good idea.
That's just out of season Christmas present when that happens.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yep.
No, I agree. I was just trying to let the other listeners, you know, if you're not interested in putting a little bit of time into it, go back to watching The Bachelorette or whatever you're watching. Have a good night. Otherwise, pay attention and do something.
But you know what, Brian, and everybody needs to understand this. I don't know if we get it across well enough. But when you do that, when you're forced to do that, okay, in my case, I was forced to do that. I didn't start on this whole thing willingly. You can ask Dave. But, you know, you end up at some point where you suddenly feel very confident about what you're doing, you feel comfortable in your knowledge, and you really start to literally have fun. The harder they fight and the more shenanigans they pull and tricky little trickster tactics, and you know right away what to do about it and how to do it and counter it, it really is fun, is it not, Brian?
Oh, it certainly is. My foreclosure attorney asked me today, we were talking about how many calls he gets. And he's not convinced on the TCPA yet.
Really?
He's too busy fighting foreclosures for the last 5 years straight.
Well, I can understand that, especially where you live.
Well, his dad was a foreclosure judge for 25 years, and now they're partners. I mean, he knows what's going on.
He should talk to a certain lawyer we know in Nevada.
He told me tonight that he would pay if I would go to night school and become an attorney. And I said, I have no desire.
Yeah.
You know, I only hired you because I was in a quandary.
Why would you want to spend all that money, go to night school, take this ridiculous test, all to become a member of an unconstitutional trade union which isn't even American, when you can do a better job on your own?
Yeah.
Well,
Hey, I hate to cut things short, guys, but we got 5 minutes left and we got two more callers. I'd like to see if we can get everybody on the line here tonight. You got anything else, Brian?
No, I beg your pardon, as Jeff would say.
Yeah.
You guys have a good night.
All right. Thanks.
Good night.
All right. We're going to go. We hopefully can get everybody in here tonight. Let's go to 207. Come on. There we go.
That's
you're
me
unmuted.
Again.
207. Yep.
That's me again. I was wondering, you mentioned something about statute of limitations on the foreclosure. Was that just for the time, were you just referencing the time that the documents are served or the time from the beginning of the lawsuit to the time that it's over?
Well,
because I didn't find
an
answer on that.
What we were talking about, statute of limitations, was on the FDCPA, not on foreclosure.
I see.
Her situation was regarding an FDCPA lawsuit she brought against the people that were attempting to foreclose. So it's
okay.
Not related to foreclosure. It's the foreclosure action was a collection action, and the issue was attempting to collect a debt after they didn't validate. So the statute of limitations was strictly related to FDCPA.
I see. I guess in my case, though, I mean, like the second appeal and the paperwork is due on Friday, and it gave me a little time because of a little health thing I had. So
yeah.
I'm walking around
that's
here,
not
and I may
yeah.
as well just pack and just, you know, call it good because I just haven't been able to, you know, I tried. I paid a heap of money to a lot of people, but I never really got it straight. But it's not just that. I would present documents to the court and they would just look the other way.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, there's a lot of that going on. All right. Well, does that answer your question? Because we got one more caller we want to try and get.
Yeah, thanks.
All righty. Thank
Bye.
You. All right, and let's go to 202. That's the Washington, D.C. area. You've been unmuted.
Hey.
Go ahead, please.
Hey, how you guys doing today? I mean,
doing
tonight.
All right. How are you?
All right. Yes, I have a question. Debt collector, Metacredit, been calling my wife's cell phone, but I think it's automatic. And they've been calling for me, and I want to know. I know that's a violation for her, but do I have a right of action to sue if they've been calling on the message? They say my name is a debt, and they say my name, but it's on her cell phone.
Well, are they calling about a debt that you had?
I never had nothing with MediCredit. I can remember, so I don't even
well,
know how
no, I'm talking about the debt that they might that they're calling about. Is that something a debt that you had with somebody? I mean, like a hospital or a doctor or something.
I'm not sure. I have to find out. I haven't been to the hospital in a while. I don't know if it was my daughter, but I know I haven't. So
yeah, I my thoughts are that I. don't think that you have any cause of action, but she does because she's the one that's receiving the calls.
Oh, okay.
And she did not give them her express consent to call her phone, right?
No, she didn't.
There you go. And if they're using an auto dialer and they're calling without express consent, and now since October of last year it's express written consent, that is a violation.
Oh, okay.
But it's a violation for her.
Oh, okay. All right. So I don't have
okay.
to. Okay. All right.
All right.
Thank
that
you.
To answer your question for you?
Yes, sir. That answered my question.
All righty. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank
all right. Everybody, we're going to wrap it up for tonight. I'd like to thank everybody for joining us. Unfortunately, Jesse did not make it in late. I kind of thought he would not. Don't forget, tomorrow afternoon, we have a webinar at 3 o'clock Eastern. That is for the members. If you're not a member of the website, my question to you is, why not? You're missing all the material. All you get here is bits and pieces. You need to get the full story. You need to have access to all the information so that instead of trying to deal with situations with bits and pieces, you're getting all the information you need, and then come to the calls on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday to help fill in the blanks or questions you may have about how some of this relates to your specific situation. But tomorrow afternoon, Terry is doing a webinar for the members, and Terry, can you give us a 10-second synopsis of what you're doing tomorrow?
I was muted, sorry. Tomorrow is a Q&A session on the subject matter of the webinar, The Nature of the Predator. We've done part one and part two. That will be part three, which will be a Q&A, and then there will be an additional part four after that. But it will be specific to the information shared in the first two. That's the Nature of the Predator webinars. It's in the Taking Their Money section.
All right. Very good. That's at 3 o'clock Eastern tomorrow afternoon. Then, of course, you get another chance to talk with Terry tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern. If you are not on Terry's mailing list to get her reminder emails for the calls, send an email to queensongbird@gmail.com. Just simply say, I'd like to be on the list. Do it now, please. Don't wait till tomorrow, because more than likely you won't get the message, because she's very busy. She's got a lot on her plate right now, especially a lot on her plate right now. But, again, her call tomorrow night is on a different system. It's not on TalkShoe. That starts at 8 o'clock Eastern time. And the intervening time around to next Monday, use the forum for the members. Post your questions. Yes, Terry?
Dave, Agenda was trying to get into the queue, and for some reason she wasn't getting there. She just had a real quick question. Does she have to notice the attorney on the other side when she files for a subpoena for her phone records or that she obtained them?
I believe she does. John should know the answer to that for sure. John?
Can you say it again?
Okay. Does she have to notice the attorney on the other side for if she files for a subpoena for phone records or the fact that she asked them for them and they're just giving them to her?
If she asked and they're just giving something, there's no notice to the other side that I'm aware required. But if she does a subpoena...
If you're doing discovery on a third party, you don't need to notice them anything. You're doing discovery. You can do your own research without keeping the other side apprised of everything. You just have to notify them when they're the subject of the discovery, when you're going in to get information from them.
I see. So even if she has to do a subpoena, that's her business and her investigation. And she would have to disclose any evidence she gets that she intends to use in a amended 26A1, correct?
Well, you can amend that later. You know, at
that's
the
what
end
I mean. You don't have to do it now, but at some point.
You don't have to tip your hand early, no.
No. Right. Okay.
Yep.
And
all
she
right.
says, thank you. Thank you, John. She's in Skype.
Okay. All right, to finish up the announcements there, we've got to wrap things up. Remember, like I said, if you're a member, use the forum. It builds a library for those people coming behind you so that there's information, questions, and the answers to those questions for all the people that follow you, and there's always new people coming. So utilize that. Then, of course, on Monday night, as we did last night, even though it was a holiday, we never miss a Monday night. There's Dallas Death Discussion on TalkShoe.com. The PIN number for that call is 54318, and that does start an hour later at 9 o'clock Eastern. So please join us on that. Here again, these calls are not a replacement for being a member of the website. You got a 60-day money-back guarantee on membership. There's no risk to you. Get in there if you haven't done it. You need to learn this stuff so you can protect your yourselves and stand up for your rights. And put some money in your pocket. What a concept. Again, thanks to everybody. Thanks to the rest of the moderators for joining us. It's been great. And we will talk to you, hopefully, on Terry's call tomorrow night. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.